Today is Thursday, January 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Pinedo Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, a U.S. top diplomat warns that Russia could launch a new attack on Ukraine on very short notice.
We will continue our relentless diplomatic efforts to prevent renewed aggression and to promote dialogue and peace. At the same time, we continue to bolster Ukraine's ability to defend itself.
President Joe Biden is ending his first year in office with low approval ratings.
The pandemic and inflation have been two major factors in President Joe Biden's sinking approval ratings at the end of his first year, around 45% according to Ipsos, a market research firm.
And scientists at the U.S. National School for Tropical Medicine develop a new COVID vaccine. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. On a visit to Kyiv, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken reassured the people of Ukraine that the United States stands with them in the face of a potential imminent Russian invasion. After meeting with Ukraine's foreign minister Wednesday, Blinken spoke with VOA in Kyiv about the U.S. diplomatic effort to calm the situation. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
As more Russian troops massed along its borders with Ukraine, Secretary of State Antony Blinken traveled to Ukraine's capital to demonstrate what he called unwavering U.S. support. In an interview with VOA in Kyiv, Blinken spoke about the gravity of the moment.
Well, first, we've offered Russia a clear choice, a choice between pursuing dialogue and diplomacy on the one hand, or confrontation and consequences on the other hand.
Blinken is traveling in the region this week as tensions on the border continue to increase. Here again, Secretary of State Blinken.
As we meet today, Russia has ratcheted up its threats and amassed nearly 100,000 forces on Ukraine's border, which it could double on relatively short order.
Ukraine's Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba called for Ukrainians to remain calm and unified.
The biggest of Russia's achievements today would be to sow panic, distrust in Ukrainian society, and to destabilize us from within. First of all, by destabilizing our economy and our financial system.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky thanked Blinken for his visit, intended to send a very strong message to Russian President Vladimir Putin as he weighs whether or not to invade. William Taylor is with the United States Institute of Peace and is a former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine.
But I'm sure he would like to have President Zelensky or President Biden be intimidated by this massive show of force. And give up some things. So far, President Zelensky and President Biden and all of his representatives have been very clear that we're not caving to that kind of intimidation. President Biden and President Zelensky both have been very firm. They have stared down President Putin. They have not blinked.
After Kyiv, Blinken travels to Berlin to meet with key European counterparts, and then to Geneva to meet Friday with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Speaking with VOA, Blinken had this to say about his meeting with Lavrov.
On the other hand, the fact that we are meeting in Geneva, the fact that we will be discussing the conversations and exchanges that we've had over the last 10 days also suggests to me that diplomacy remains an open possibility.
Meanwhile, in another show of support for Ukraine, British military aid arrived in Kyiv Tuesday, including anti-tank weapons, to help Ukraine defend itself from a potential Russian invasion. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
As tensions rise in Ukraine, the first units of the Russian military arrived in Belarus to participate in a joint military exercises known as, quote, Union Reserve 2022, unquote. In a video released by the Russian Minister of Defense on Wednesday, Russian army members are greeted by their Belarusian counterparts with traditional bread and salt upon unloading dozens of military armored vehicles. According to the statement by the ministry, quote, Union Reserve 2022, unquote, will be a testing point for the joint armed forces of the Union States of Russia and Belarus in their reaction to any possible aggression. Earlier, Russian Deputy Defense Minister Alexander Fomin announced the relocation of the two battalions of mobile S-400 surface-to-air missile defense systems to Belarus as part of joint drills. The exercises are conducted amid escalating tensions on the Ukrainian border, where Russia has massed tens of thousands of troops, raising fears of an invasion and prompting warnings from the West. President Joe Biden is ending his first year in office with low approval ratings, largely due to an economic recovery dragged down by inflation and a pandemic that is surging yet again. This, despite reaching a bipartisan consensus to pass the $1.9 trillion stimulus plan and a $1 trillion infrastructure package. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Guidi-Askewara has this recap.
A $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package pushed through by the Biden administration in March has helped American businesses and families weather the financial impact of the pandemic. The package sent $1,400 in stimulus funding to millions of Americans and monthly payments that have proven successful in reducing poverty. But for many, rising inflation has minimized the impact of that assistance.
Due to the COVID, people don't have money. We're just starting back to work and stuff like that. This is outrageous with the prices of the gas today.
Consumer prices in December were 7% higher than those of the year-ago period, marking the highest inflation rate in 40 years. Inflation has dampened economic recovery in a year that the administration says has shown the biggest job growth in American history. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Look at the initial unemployment claims. They're on average, they were at 812,000 a year ago. They're now at 210,000. The unemployment rate and obviously job creation the year before the president took office and the last year. As it relates to COVID, if we look to a year ago, only 1% of adults were fully vaccinated. 74% of adults are fully vaccinated now.
A relatively smooth rollout of COVID-19 vaccines has offered protection to more than 200 million Americans and even provided a brief return to normalcy last year. That is, until Omicron caused cases and hospitalizations to spike yet again. The pandemic and inflation have been two major factors in President Joe Biden's sinking approval ratings at the end of his first year, around 45% according to Ipsos, a market research firm. Mallory Newell, Vice President of Public Affairs at Ipsos via Skype.
The president campaigned on eradicating COVID and getting the economy and getting America back to normal. And the longer that the pandemic goes on, the more uncertainty Americans have, and frankly, the more frustration they feel about the fact that they're still dealing with the pandemic.
Meanwhile, Biden's legislative agenda is also a mixed bag. He pushed through a $1 trillion infrastructure law with Republican support, the biggest investment in the nation's public works in a generation. But he has yet to pass Build Back Better, his $1.75 trillion social spending and climate change plan, even though it has already been cut in half from its original size. Other legislative agenda items remain stuck. Two voting rights bills that would greatly expand federal control over elections are stalled in the Senate due to Republican opposition. Some analysts say the administration and Democrats need to reset their agenda. Kevin Kosar, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute via Skype.
They have to ask themselves, realizing that Republicans are going to have very little interest in playing ball on high salience issues, what are the smaller things that they can work on that might build up over time and kind of change the narrative from, hey, this guy came in and took big swings at the plate and whiffed, to, hey, this guy showed up and he hit a lot of singles.
And despite Biden's promise to heal a divided nation, Americans are still deeply polarized following the Capitol siege by supporters of Donald Trump on January 6, 2021. Polls suggest most Republicans still believe the baseless claim pushed by the former president that the 2020 election was stolen. Patsy Guidi-Askewara, VOA News, Washington.
As the fighting in Yemen heats up, the UN Human Rights Office warns Yemen's warring parties that wanton attacks against civilians and civilian targets could amount to war crimes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Reciprocal attacks by Yemen's warring parties have been escalating this month. They've intensified since Iranian-backed Houthi rebels carried out missile and bomb-laden drone attacks on the United Arab Emirates Monday, killing three people. In retaliation for those attacks, the government-backed Saudi-led coalition bombed targets in the Yemeni capital Sana'a, reportedly killing at least five civilians from the same family. The UN Human Rights Office says it fears more civilian casualties as wanton attacks continue to spiral in the nearly seven-year-long conflict. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says the antagonists have launched dozens of air and artillery strikes in recent days with seemingly little regard for civilian welfare.
The fighting has damaged civilian objects and critical infrastructure, including telecommunications towers and water reservoirs, as well as hospitals in Sana'a and Taiz. With front lines shifting rapidly over large areas, civilians are also exposed to the constant threat of landmines.
Shamdasani cites a litany of destructive attacks and counterattacks by the Saudi coalition and Houthi rebels since the start of the year. During this period, at least 11 civilians reportedly have been killed and 12 injured, and great damage has been done to civilian infrastructure. Figures collected by human rights monitors indicate 839 airstrikes by the Saudi-led coalition in January, compared with 1,074 for all of December. The Houthi rebels, they say, lobbed 10 drone strikes towards Saudi Arabia this month and fired 31 drones, missiles, and projectiles towards Saudi Arabia in December. Houthi rebels use inexpensive drones strapped with explosives and fly them into targets. The UN Rights Office is calling on all parties to ensure the protection of civilians and civilian objects. Shamdasani says that is more than a request because under international law, they are obliged to do so.
In particular, parties to the conflict must take all feasible measures to verify that the targets are indeed military objectives, and suspend an attack if it becomes apparent that the target is not a military objective or that the attack would be disproportionate. Failure to respect the principles of distinction and proportionality could amount to war crimes.
Since Yemen's civil conflict began in March 2015, the United Nations says more than 377,000 people have died, 60% by indirect causes such as lack of safe drinking water, disease, and acute hunger. Yemen continues to be the world's worst humanitarian crisis, with more than 20 million people, or two-thirds of the population, in need of humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
There is a new vaccine in the fight against COVID-19. Scientists at the U.S. National School of Tropical Medicine, Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas, have developed a new medication they say will help get more people immunized in low-income countries against COVID-19. The vaccine, Covivax, has been developed by a team led by Dr. Peter Hotez, co-director of the Center for Vaccine Development at Texas Children's Hospital and dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine, and Professor Maria Elena Botazzi, associate dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. Africa 54 health correspondent Linod Modu spoke to Professors Hotez and Botazzi for more on the vaccine.
Corbevax is really the vaccine that was co-developed by Biological E in India. We managed to transfer the technology of how to make a recombinant protein. In this case, it's a receptor binding domain that really targets the original virus. But now, of course, we know that it also can confer really great protection against the variant of concerns, especially Beta and Delta, and we're in studies right now to evaluate Omicron. So we take this engineering of recombinant proteins, we produce the constructs, we call them seeds, and then we transfer these to the manufacturers like BioE. Then we provide them, you know, the procedures of how we can produce them in the lab, and then they, of course, scale them to industrial scales. I mean, Biological E can make 100 million doses of this vaccine, right, from the recipe that we originally gave them. And as with Biological E, we're doing it with many other manufacturers such that they can then really increase the availability. After, you know, major studies, clinical studies in India, we can now see that this is a very efficacious and safe and highly producible vaccine.
Dr. Otez, why is this vaccine suitable for low and middle income countries?
Well, the real advantage is, number one, it's there's no limit to the amount you could scale. You can make billions of doses. It uses an older technology similar to that used to make the recombinant hepatitis B vaccine. And that's significant because that vaccine is made locally in multiple countries in the global south, in India and Indonesia and Bangladesh and Vietnam and Brazil and elsewhere. So that if you need to produce a vaccine locally, this is the technology to do it. We've transferred the technology with no patents, no strings attached, and we help in the co-development to at least four countries so far, with more to follow: India, Indonesia, Bangladesh, and now Botswana. This potentially could be actually made in sub-Saharan Africa. BioE is the first, the furthest along, the one in India. They've made now 150 million doses. That's ready to roll out, and they have the capacity for a billion doses. It's a high bar because we've got to provide 9 billion doses for low and middle income countries, 20 billion globally. I doubt we're going to do that with mRNA vaccines and the other technologies. So this will come in order to get people vaccinated by 2022. And if we really work hard and get people vaccinated now, potentially we can forestall the new variant for the summer.
What are the prospects of this vaccine being approved by the EU and the United States for travelers?
Biological E, who is a vaccine manufacturer that has years of experience working with the World Health Organization, and many of their vaccines are pre-qualified, are already working with the agencies to seek that emergency listing for the global use. We can also increase the level of distribution around the world.
There have been a very big challenge around vaccine hesitancy. There are countries where vaccines have been thrown away because people were refusing to get vaccinated. What do you think will make Corbevax different, where people will be more accepting?
They've already taken a vaccine like it through the hepatitis B vaccine, similar to yeast fermentation technology, either for themselves or their kids. Easy to scale, one of the lowest cost vaccines, one of the best safety profiles, a tried and true technology. People are willing to accept it. So when you go down the checklist, our vaccine checks a lot of boxes.
What are the main takeaways then when we talk about Corbevax as a new vaccine coming in the pool of vaccine against COVID-19?
Having very trustworthy partnerships, I think that it was key, right? So our vaccine center has been working for years with the developing country vaccine manufacturer network, working directly with locations in the low middle income countries to enable them, you know, self-sufficiency and self-reliance. The fact that we already had 10-year prior experience working with coronavirus vaccines that really enabled that this technology could be very rapidly readapted for the COVID-19 sequence. The procedures are very well known. The regulators know about them. The manufacturers know about them. The supply requirements are very well established. So they're accessible and they're affordable. And the best takeaway is this could be a game changer also in acceptance, because it's already comes with years of experience in how they behave with regards to safety, including safety in a very young population.
You know, at some point, someone has to step up and say, what are we going to do to really help the world's low and middle income countries? And to tie it down with bickering and fighting over legalities and patents and intellectual property, this is not the way. At some point, we have to show a humanitarian concern for all the world's people. And at the same time, it's even in our own enlightened self-interest to prevent these new variants.
Dr. Peter Otez, Dr. Maria Elena Butazi, thank you so much to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
That's Dr. Peter Otez, co-director of the Center for Vaccine Development at Texas Children's Hospital, and Dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine, and Professor Maria Elena Botazzi, Associate Dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. They spoke with VOA's Africa 54 health correspondent, Leonard Modu. A South African study has found the Omicron variant of COVID-19 is less severe than previous ones, even for the unvaccinated. The country's top scientists said this could be good news for bringing an end to the pandemic, as the highly contagious variant also spreads resistance. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
South Africans no longer have to race to get home before midnight. A curfew imposed at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic was finally scrapped ahead of New Year's Eve. Now, Dr. Marianne Davies, a professor of epidemiology at the University of Cape Town, says there's more good news about the latest coronavirus variant, Omicron.
We see about a 25% lowering of the risk of death, so about 1.3 times lower risk of death. And so that makes us think that residual effect, that 25% reduction, could be the true effect due to lower virulence of the Omicron compared to previous variants.
So that reduction is compared to the previous Delta variant, which was more severe than the original virus. The study, which is yet to be peer-reviewed, found Omicron to be similar in severity to the first wave. Davy says a major difference now is that prior infections and vaccinations help reduce hospitalizations and deaths. While Omicron evaded vaccines and reinfected people, Dr. Shabir Madi, a professor of vaccinology at the University of the Witwatersrand, says that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's going to boost immune responses in people that were previously infected. It can boost immune responses in people that have been vaccinated, and it will also result in further immunity in people that haven't been previously infected or vaccinated up until now. The data is quite compelling that people that have this hybrid immunity, vaccine together with infection, in fact, they probably got a better immune response.
Scientists emphasize getting the virus is no substitute for a vaccine. Death rates remain highest among people who aren't inoculated. Official government figures say over 93,000 lives have been lost. Davies says getting sick has other consequences.
But even a mild variant can cause a lot of chaos for a health service for a number of reasons. The one is with these very high transmission rates. You get a lot of people infected at any one time, and that includes healthcare workers. And so that means that you've got a lot of people who are off work and often their contacts needing to be quarantined, and that can have huge impacts.
Still, the promise of less stringent protocols is welcome to businesses hurting from nearly 2 years of curfews and lockdowns. Alex Zabo is the owner of the Antisocial Club, a bar and restaurant in Johannesburg.
There was a big conversational point on the 28th of December where do we stay closed or do we reopen? And the reason we reopened was these extra 3 hours. We do believe that there has to be a brighter day coming.
Whether increased immunity amid fewer restrictions will be enough to ward off the worst effects of the coronavirus will be tested by future variants. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In other news, the Red Cross and officials of Tonga say three of its smaller islands have suffered serious damage from tsunami waves. This as a wider picture begins to emerge of the destruction caused by the eruption of an undersea volcano near the Pacific Archipelago Nation. Communications have been down throughout Tonga since the eruption on Saturday, but a ship made it to the outlying islands of Nomuka, Mango, and Fonupua on Wednesday and reported back that few homes remained standing after settlements were hit with a 15-meter-high waves. Says Kathy Greenwood, the head of delegation in the Pacific for the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, which had two people aboard the vessel to help assess the damage. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Okoh in Washington. UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, is appealing for $1.6 billion to provide life-saving assistance to more than 5 million Palestinian refugees in Gaza, the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, and countries across the Middle East. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The budget will cover the increased needs of Palestinian refugees in the face of skyrocketing unemployment and poverty. UN officials say an estimated 2.3 million refugees across the Middle East are living in poverty, with many struggling to survive on less than $2 a day. They add the COVID-19 pandemic is posing serious health risks and worsening the economic hardships. UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini says his agency's humanitarian operations are a lifeline for the most destitute.
UNRWA prevents them from falling deeper into poverty and from resorting to negative coping mechanisms such as child labor, early marriage, migration through dangerous routes, or at times radicalization. It is also an investment in regional stability.
Lazzarini says the Palestinian refugees are one of the most vulnerable communities in a highly volatile region. He notes UNRWA at times is the only predictable and reliable source of basic services for the refugees. He says the agency provides quality education to a 500,000 girls and boys and primary health care for 2 million people. He adds millions of refugees suffering from the ongoing humanitarian crises in the Palestinian territories in Syria, Jordan, and Lebanon receive cash and food assistance. Unfortunately, Lazzarini warns, these vital services are hanging by a thread. Over the last decade, he says, UNRWA has been expected to deliver services to millions of refugees, while the resources needed to do so have been steadily withering away.
We have been able to handle this tension first by using our financial reserves, then through austerity measure, and finally through increased liabilities. Today, we have reached our limit. If this tension is not addressed, the agency faces the risk of collapsing like a house of cards.
Lazzarini says UNRWA has enough money to operate for the next 2 to 3 months. After that, he says, its ability to provide essential relief to millions of Palestinian refugees will be open to question. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As of January 1st, a U.S. trade program that allows African countries to export many items duty-free to the American market delisted Mali because of what the U.S. cited as, quote, unconstitutional developments in the country, unquote. But artisans in Mali's capital said they are the ones paying for the bad actions of the country's leaders. Mokhtar Bari reports for VOA from Bamako.
The U.S. cited unconstitutional change in its January 1st decision to drop Mali as a beneficiary of a duty-free trade through the African Grow and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. The West African country has experienced two coups since 2020 and election delays by the military-led transitional government. Losing AGOA's competitive advantage is another blow on top of a global pandemic-related recession, says Musa Bagayoko, a Bamako craftsman who weaves and dyes cotton fabric.
There is no more work for America. The coronavirus had completely shut us out of everything. The U.S. government suspend us based on the fact that we do not have a good model of democracy at home. This suspension affects us craftsmen, not authorities. I have been accredited since 2013 and I earned my living through AGOA, but not if it is taken away from me.
Cotton trader Bisan Aminata Koulibaly says she too is suffering.
It's like we've had the bread knocked out of us. This is a big problem that blocks our business activities. It can push a company into bankruptcy, and a lot of people will go unemployed.
After gold, cotton is Mali's biggest export item. Many Malians are involved in growing it or making textiles. But relatively little cotton goes to the United States, and Mali is not a major U.S. trading partner. Losing beneficial trade status nonetheless will hurt the craft sector, artisans say. Musa Bagayoko, a Bamako craftsman who weaves and dyes cotton fabric.
Tell the people in power to avoid a coup d'etat. The suspension does not suit us. If you try to sell in America without AGUA, you won't earn anything anymore. Because the tariffs are so high, we have only a modest background.
The U.S. government said if Mali meets eligibility requirement for AGOA, it will consider restoring the country's participation in the trade program as soon as possible. Bagasi Kura, Mokhtar Bari for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, ba-ba-bo-zip.